We love you. God bless.
Before God created civil government, He created family. Before He created even the church, God created family. Families play a vital role in training the next generation. Commit today to nurturing and supporting families, especially your own. Families that are committed to God and each other can play a vital role in transforming our churches, cities, states, and nation.
Welcome to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center. And now for today's message, here's Associate Pastor Brian Longworth.
We've been discussing government policies that discriminate against families and lead to poverty. And I was discussing this with one of our customers a few months ago, and he told me that he remembers when Lyndon Johnson was putting in the Great Society and the war on poverty, and his dad was learning that women that didn't have a husband would receive money and women that did have a husband would not receive money. And he remembers his dad coming home every day and sitting down at the table and just shaking his head and saying, "Why? Why are they doing this? Don't they realize that they're going to destroy the family?" We've talked about and actually read quotes from Thomas Sowell and from Candace Owen and Walter Williams. Walter Williams is no longer with us, but we've read quotes from them. Walter Williams and Thomas Sowell both grew up without a father in the home. In fact, Walter Williams grew up without a father in his home. He was the only person in his community, the only kid growing up in his community that didn't have a father in the home. Thomas Sowell, both of his parents died when he was young, so young that he doesn't even remember them. He was raised by other relatives. He was the only person in his community, and I believe he grew up in Harlem or Brooklyn in New York, but he was the only person in his community, the only kid in his community that didn't have a father and a mother in the home. Yet today, in the African-American communities, an African-American kid, 75% of them grow up without a father in the home. And there's a problem when we have government policies that actually reward fatherlessness in the home. That's a problem, and it should be something that should alarm us. It should be something that we should actually look at and wonder, why is this? And it's not only the welfare policies that do reward fatherless homes. It's also the taxing system. If you have two people, a man and a woman, who live together that aren't married, they will file taxes differently than people than a man and a wife, a husband and a wife, and they will actually pay less in taxes than the couple that are just living together that aren't married. And for this purpose, for this reason, there are some people, older people and younger people, who are living together today in the United States who aren't married. So we have yet another government policy that actually discriminates against families and leads to poverty. One of the things that we want to actually look at today, we want to just review what we've talked about in the past in past sermons, but also lay some new groundwork. I actually ask you if you could think of any Bible passage where God authorizes the government to take money from some people and give it to other people, or even where God authorizes the government to set up a program to provide assistance to people. And We're going to actually look at that from the Bible. And we actually should, I want to challenge you to look at the Bible, to examine what God says in His Word, and to apply it to not only your life, but also your family, your church, your civic organizations, the church and your cities, your states and your nations, your counties. We need to provide to our school board. We need to apply biblical principles to every area of life, including government. God created laws for a purpose, and governments need to abide by those laws if that government wants to be blessed. If we want to be blessed in America, it's important that we keep His commandments. We see first that the welfare state is actually a political policy that is rooted in theft, that is taking money from someone or from some people, a group of people, and giving it to another group of people. And if I were to go out and find a rich person, you know, let's say I were to go out and find Jeff Bezos today or Bill Gates, and I were to steal money from them, and I were to take that money and I were to give it to the poor, I could be arrested, and I would be arrested very likely for stealing. But the government does that on a regular basis, and they're not arrested for stealing. It's also based on covetousness, coveting what someone else has. Certainly, it would be nice to a certain extent to have the money that Bill Gates has or to have the money that Jeff Bezos has. But they've worked for that. They've earned that money, and God has given that to them. God has given them the ability to earn the money. Now, you know, God gives us the ability to earn money so that we can work to establish His kingdom. And I don't think that Bill Gates, that even is something that is in Bill Gates' consciousness, that he is supposed to be using that wealth to establish the kingdom of God. But that still is the purpose that God gives us the power to get wealth. We also see from 1 Samuel chapter 8 that God defines a tyrannical tax as 10%. The founding fathers thought it would be a hard government that would require 10%, and that's actually a quote from the Poor Richard's Almanac by Benjamin Franklin. It would be a hard government that would require 10% of its people. We also see from the Bible that God wants for people to work. Even the poor would work to receive food for charity. And you can see this in Proverbs chapter 16. And the welfare state actually robs people of the satisfaction of providing for themselves and keeps them in poverty. We see that biblically, even again, charity involves work. Ruth worked for her food. Charity also begins at home. We are to care for those in our own family. And not only our own children and spouses caring for each other, but also in 1 Timothy chapter 5, specifically, it is talking about children caring for their parents and parents and also grandchildren caring for their grandparents. And this is something that we should actually look at, and we should actually move toward and reestablish that care. And we see this a lot today, but we don't see it to the level that we need to see it. Children caring for their parents and for their grandparents. We also see God promoting private charity. You see this in James chapter 2, verses 15 through 16. And we see that charity from the church, again in 1 Timothy chapter 5, when the family can't, when private charity doesn't meet the need, when someone can't work for themselves, we see actually the church caring for those who can't care for themselves. And then we see probably the greatest example of private charity in the Good Samaritan. And you may want to actually go to our church website, covenanttabernacle.com, or our church Facebook page, Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center, and listen to the sermon, watch the sermon. The Good Samaritan that called his congressman that we preached, I preached 2 weeks ago. But we're actually, and we see also that the Bible actually confirms the principle of private property. Even in the time of the first century church, the very early church, when they really were under persecution, they couldn't go out and work, and people were selling land and actually bringing the money to the apostles. Even then, God upheld private property. So we're going to ask again, is there any example in the Bible where God authorizes taking money from some people and giving it to other people for the government to do this? And the answer to that is no. You can actually look through the Bible. You will not find it. You will not see it. God created government. God is the one who laid out the groundwork for what government should do and what they shouldn't do. And God authorizes government to do certain things. And in fact, many of the things that God authorizes government to do, some of those same people that want the government to do a whole bunch of other things that God hasn't authorized the government to do, actually speak out against those things. And that is national defense and criminal justice. But there is one example, and only one example, of God authorizing a government program to provide assistance. You may have remember, and I'm sure you've heard about the story of Joseph. Now imagine being a young brother, not the youngest brother, but a young brother with 11 other brothers, and going and you know sharing them your dreams, sharing with them what God has shown you and what God has revealed to you. And your brothers hate you. Your father loves you, and he bestows extra blessings upon you, but your brothers despise you in part because of this and in part because of your dreams. And then your brothers actually are plotting to kill you, and they throw you into a big pit, and they're going to kill you. But one of the brothers talks them into, instead of killing him, let's sell him as a slave. So you get sold as a slave. You go to a foreign land. You're serving in a house in a foreign land. And then not only are you a slave, but you're accused falsely, and you're thrown into prison. And in prison, you're actually put in charge of everything. And then you actually, to a Pharaoh's servants, you actually interpret their dreams. One of them is put to death. The other one is restored. And what happens after that is Pharaoh has some dreams. And Pharaoh has some very troubling dreams. And we're going to pick up this story in Genesis chapter 41, beginning in verse 25. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, and by the way, Joseph was called out of prison. He was called out of prison to Pharaoh because Pharaoh had these dreams and needed interpretation. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one, and the seven thin and ugly cows, and the seven thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years, and the seven heads, empty heads, blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. Indeed, 7 years of good plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following, for it will be very severe. And the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this and let him appoint officers over the land to collect one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the seven plentiful years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. Then that food shall be as a reserve for the land for the severe years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land may not perish during the famine. So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand. And he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he had him ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried out before him, "Bow the knee." And he set him over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him the wife of Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out of the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. Now in the seven plentiful years, the ground brought forth abundantly, and he gathered all the food of the 7 years, which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities. He laid up in every city the food of the fields which surrounded them. Joseph gathered very much grain as the sand of the sea until he stopped counting, for it was immeasurable. So Joseph and to Joseph were born two sons before the years of the famine came. And we're going to skip down to verse 53. Then the 7 years of plenty, which were in the land of Egypt, ended. And the 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph had said, and the famine was in the land. But in all the land of Egypt, there was bread. So when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Then Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph, whatever he says to you, do." The famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine became great in the land of Egypt. So all the countries came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain, because the famine was severe in all the lands. So what we see here is we see this 7 years of great plenty. Joseph stores up and takes 20% of all the produce that was produced during that 7 years. And that 20% fed not only Egypt, because the abundance, the produce was so abundant, they had such a large harvest that he was able to take that 20% and feed not only all of Egypt, but all of Israel and also all of the people of Canaan, which is the land that Israel, where Israel dwelt the nation of Israel, which was really at that point only a family. And what we actually see is that the other nations that Israel would eventually inhabit, that Canaan land that Israel would eventually inhabit, they were fed with this grain as well, with that 20%. I want to point out one other thing. Now, if 20% fed the entire nation of Egypt and all the people of the Canaan land for 7 years, the people who lived in Egypt could have stored their own grain and they could have been provided for, but they didn't do that. So they actually were buying food back. They gave money to, or they gave the food to Egypt. Joseph had collected this sort of as a tax, although it wasn't officially a tax at that point, but 20%. And then they're using their own money to buy back grain that they had given to Pharaoh himself. Now, Joseph's brothers came to get food because they were hungry as well. And Joseph does and you can read about it in that chapter, in chapters 41, 42, 43, 44, 45, you can read about what Joseph actually lays a trick for them and actually has them prove that they really have remorse, that they have repented, that they're sorry for what they did. And Joseph says to them that for them to not be to grieve in verse 5 of chapter 45, but now do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. And just realize this, when you're in a tough situation, most of the people listening are never going to go through what Joseph went through. Joseph, again, being hated by his brothers, being sold as a slave, and then being falsely accused and imprisoned, but he was just in one day he went from being an inmate to ruling the nation of Israel, and it was because God had a covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob, and God wanted to preserve their lives, and so he tells them not to mourn. And then what we see happen later, and you can go into Genesis chapter 47. We won't read all of this, but in Genesis chapter 47, we see that the Israel and Joseph's brothers, his father, their children, their produce, everything that they have, they actually came to Egypt. We also see that in verse 14, and Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the grain which they bought, and Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. So all the money at this point was gone. The people started out this having land. They started out having money. Now they have no money. And so when the money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph saying, "Give us bread, for why should we die from your presence for the money, in your presence for the money has failed." And so Joseph says, "Give me your livestock." So they give him their livestock. They bring their livestock in exchange for grain. Again, this is grain that they gave to Egypt. They're actually having to pay. They've already paid all their money. Now they're paying with their livestock. In verse 18, when that year ended, they came to him the next year and said, "We will not hide from my Lord that our money is gone. My Lord has our livestock, our herds of livestock. There is nothing left in the sight of my Lord but our bodies and our land." And what happens is they say, "Buy us. We will be slaves to Pharaoh. Buy our land, buy us, we will be slaves, we will serve Pharaoh, but give us grain." And that's exactly what happened. Joseph Joseph actually bought their land, and he bought them with grain. And from there on out, they were able to farm their own land, but they had to give 20% for the rest of their lives to Pharaoh. So they enter this being totally free, having money, having herd, having flocks, having land, having property, and they leave it. They at the end of this, they exit this being virtually slaves to Pharaoh, not owning their own land, not having any money, not having any flock. So even in a situation where you have a wise person appointed by God, given wisdom from God, you see that it actually resulted in the enslavement of a nation. So prior to Egypt enslaving the Israelites, and that is the first recorded slavery in history, really the Egyptians kind of became slaves through this whole process. They weren't really 100% slaves, but they were Pharaoh's servants, and they did have to pay 20% for the rest of their lives. So even in this one situation, and Joseph makes it clear that the reason this happened, the reason that he became a slave, that they sold him into slavery, the reason that he was thrown into prison, was so that he could actually provide for his family, which would become the nation of Israel, which, by the way, Jesus would come from that nation as well. And so there's a huge reason for this, and many people were saved because of this. So, but even when a wise person with wisdom from God is running the government program, it still results in bondage of the people who are recipients of it. Much less when we have fools that are running government programs, and we have seen the devastation that has happened in America today. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.
You've been listening to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Join us each Sunday morning for The Lighthouse. If you've been blessed by this broadcast, visit www.covenanttabernacle.com, where you can give us feedback and make a donation.
Before God created civil government, he created family. Before he created even the church, God created family. Families play a vital role in training the next generation. Commit today to nurturing and supporting families, especially your own. Families that are committed to God and each other can play a vital role in transforming our churches, cities, states, and nations.